Hey, welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. Our weekly mission to keep South Florida informed on local and regional news and issues affecting our community with a panel of the area and state's top journalists. And this week, we welcome back from the South Florida Sun-Sentinel, a columnist we've all grown to know and love and read, Mr. Michael Mayo. Hey, Mike Mayo.
Hey, Phil Latzman. Always a pleasure.
Good to be here. Good to have you. And also with us, a repeat offender as well from NBC6 Television, a reporter in politics and, of course, covered the 2012 election very extensively and has been a reporter at NBC6 now for how long, Steve Litz?
7 proud years, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Steve, by the way, all of us, and we're going to introduce Mary Ellen Kloss, who's joining us from Tallahassee in just a moment. The three of us on this panel have some sports background as well. So we'll be diving into the Dolphins stadium issue in just a moment. And we want to remind you that it's your show, too. You can call us at 800-743-WLRN. That's 800-743-9576. You can also line up emailing us at thefloridaroundup@gmail.com. We do also have our live, what do we call this? Live blog, tweet-a-thon, Facebook-a-thon. Anyway, we are tweetable at WLRN, and then you can go to WLRN.org or our Facebook page to participate in our live blog. It's an online discussion that is being hosted by a very hardworking and fast-typing social media editor, Danny Rivero. And we also asked members of the Public Insight Network what they thought about the Dolphins' proposal to split the costs of renovating their stadium with the public this past Monday. We also asked about the Cuba's new travel policy, which we'll get into, and we'll hear from members of the Public Insight Network and hear your feedback a little bit later on in the show. And we're going to talk a lot about state stuff as well. But we will begin with what really has been blowing up like wildfire is the discussion that the Miami Dolphins have put forth in making the case for their $400 million in upgrades to Sun Life Stadium. Team owner Stephen Ross says the team would pay for much of the renovation, but is still seeking public funds to pay for what could be pretty close to half of the cost. Ross, in a visit to the Miami Herald on Monday, says he wants the stadium to be the finest sports facility in the land.
Well, Miami is a world-class city, and I think you want to keep that image up. And it's just, Miami is looked at throughout the rest of the world. It's very aspirational, and it all goes with being part of a world-class city.
So the Dolphins are floating the idea of higher bed tax for mainland Miami-Dade hotels, not Miami Beach, and a total of $5 million in yearly sales tax incentives. The improvements would include a canopy that rings the stadium for protection against rain, sun, seating changes, and new scoreboards. And, of course, the Super Bowl is the big carrot that's being dangled, as organizers have indicated South Florida must do something to improve this 25-year-old stadium, which has actually already been improved upon in that span. Mike Mayo, what do you think of that pitch?
Well, I think this is what you can call another Dolphins fishing expedition. And they're trying to reel in a big one on the hook. And in the case of like Broward and Palm Beach counties, we're off the hook because they're not aiming any of their public dollar pitch at us.
Because they can't, by law, contribute to it since the stadium's
in
Miami-Dade.
They tried 2 years ago, and it got shot down pretty quickly by the Broward politicians. But the question is, will Miami-Dade bite again, especially in wake of the other fish story, the Marlins, and that one has turned out to be a pretty stinky story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the Miami Dolphins' proposed deal to use some state and local tax dollars to renovate the stadium is garnering some support from local lawmakers and businesses, but for the most part, from what we have been able to gather, Steve, and probably you folks at NBC6 have been able to gather, virtually no public support other than business leaders and hotels, even fervent fans of the Dolphins in football. You can't find them to support this kind of deal.
And no shocker there, right? I mean, I think the Florida Marlins burned this town something awful when they changed out, their best players and made wholesale changes to their team the year after, 1 year after they built that stadium. And so, gosh, it's such a sore spot. And to go back to the public, it's going to be a tough sell. But the fact of the matter is something's got to be done with that stadium. And important to note, it's not, you're not going to put a roof on that thing. It's too hot. You're going to cover the people from getting wet. And so it's important people understand what is going to be done to the stadium. But listen, if we want to host another Super Bowl, which is a giant event and has become a worldwide spectacle, you got to do something with that stadium. It's a tough call. I don't think you're going to get Stephen Ross to step up and pay the entire ticket.
I'm going to jump in and dispute that. But first, let's go back to the first point about it being a tough sell. And that's absolutely true. And I thought it was interesting. The first question I asked Steve Ross at the press conference that they held on Monday was, well, considering what happened with the Marlins, and they never went to a public vote, would you be willing to put this to some sort of public referendum? And I know I understand that this the bed tax is already authorized. If they want to increase it a penny, they don't have to. But just in terms of, you know, making it a little bit more palatable, why not put it to a public vote? Let's see what the public thinks. And he, of course, immediately said, oh, no, that would be impossible. We're on a very tight timetable, blah, blah, blah. So I thought that was telling. They're scared to go to a vote.
Sure.
Although I've had some Dolphins officials and tell me that they've had some internal polling saying that they have 60% showing some favorability towards this plan. Again, I don't know who did the polling and how it was phrased. Getting to the other point about, yeah, we need this for the big games, the big events, the Super Bowls, the college championship. I think there's a difference between need and want. This is a pretty fine facility as is. We just hosted a national championship game that was, the game itself was lousy, but everything up leading up to it, the week, the atmosphere, the parties around town, and even the facility itself is just fine. The question is, it's gotten to this arms race mentality with these other stadiums around the country where they're all building billion-dollar stadiums with all these bells and whistles. But for a three-hour event, I think this stadium is just fine. And my position on this, which I'm vehemently opposed to any public dollars going towards stadiums, especially the private facilities, and if the Super Bowl and the championship game doesn't want to come back, they're going to miss South Florida more than South Florida misses them.
They're not going to miss the rain. I mean, you got to do something about the rain.
Well, it happened once, Steve, in one game and in 10, 11 Super Bowls here in South Florida.
True.
Was that an issue? Was that worth spending
$400 million? Weather at an outdoor
right.
Super Bowl.
Go to San Francisco.
MetLife Stadium next year in New York,
right.
New Jersey.
Freeze your butt off and have a good
that's
time.
That's going to be great.
That's the
if the NFL wants to continue to go to those cold weathers, Dallas was a disaster.
Right.
You know, it was freezing in Detroit that year they had it.
Right. No, that's the choice.
They'll be begging to come back. That's my position. Call their bluff. That's fine. We don't need to put any public money in
it. As far as it has relates to the Marlins Stadium, here is Representative Eddie Gonzalez of Hialeah. He says, not a comparison.
The owner of the Marlins paid maybe 15% or 20%. I don't know what the exact number is, but it wasn't a lot. We're going to ask the owner here to pay a lot more than that.
So we also reached out this week in the public radio fashion to an economist, the University of South Florida economic professor. His name is Philip Porter. I like his name. He says research shows that communities do not receive an economic benefit from large sporting events like the Super Bowl.
The direct notion of we need to subsidize this team because the team gives back so much income and sales and wealth to the community, that's a totally bogus idea. If the idea is we ought to sponsor the team because they're a cultural amenity and we love them and we want to give them money, well, I have no argument against that.
Of course, we talked about the hotels coming out for it. And then Steve Litz this week, Norman Brayman, who opposed the Marlins Stadium deal, has made it known that he is obviously against this. And the irony there is that he is the former owner of the Philadelphia Eagles and did some battles with the city of Philadelphia over Veterans Stadium. But he's fervently against this as well.
And listen, he is South Florida's billion-dollar activist. And when he doesn't, you know, when he thinks something stinks and he thinks the local government or any government is doing something wrong, he steps up. You got to give the guy credit for opening up his mouth and and being vocal on these issues. And you know, if anybody's going to come back and give the old "I told you so," look at the Florida Marlins.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup here on 91.3 WLR. Now the Miami Marlins, of course, in their new stadium.
That's right.
And that's sort of poisoned the well, if you will, to what's going on here a little bit. But we did ask members of the Public Insight Network. We're going to introduce the panel. And Mary Ellen Kloss from Tallahassee is going to join us as we resume things in just a moment. In fact, let's introduce her because she's standing by. She's made it there. Hi, Mary Ellen.
Hi there.
She is the Miami Herald's Tallahassee Bureau Chief. So, first of all, on this, before we get to the calls and from our members of the Public Insight Network, how would the state fit into all of this, and what is the general reaction? Because they're asking for an additional $3 million a year in incentives over sales tax over this. And, of course, you've heard this from Tallahassee before. Do you think that there's a chance that the Dolphins will be able to get that kind of money from the state?
Well, it was difficult. You know, we've heard this refrain before, and Obviously, the pitch they will make is that this will be a job creator or a job generator or an economic development generator, and that may move some votes in Tallahassee. But I think this is the kind of thing that it's a really heavy lift, especially since it's a South Florida-based benefit that could have tax increase potential. And I just think that this legislature is not likely to move in this direction. They struggled for years trying to get the Florida legislature to accommodate the Marlins and got nowhere. And I just don't see that the Dolphins are going to succeed any more easily.
Mike?
And correct me if I'm wrong, I think there's already a $2 million a year sales tax rebate that these sports stadiums and teams already get. What the Dolphins are trying to do is basically increase it and get an additional $3 million, and they're trying to make it only for themselves, saying only if you're renovating an existing facility for $250 million or more, and we contribute more than half. So they're trying to kind of tailor this specialized legislation only for them, and I think the other sports teams will balk at it, and I think the state taxpayers should balk at it too. You know?
Apparently there's only one such incentive available to a stadium. It's not like you can get this if you want it in Tampa, or it's only one available for the entire state with this additional $3 million in incentives, if you will. I don't think they're calling it it's not a rebate, it's more incentives.
Well, no, it's a rebate. It's sales tax that's generated from goods and services at the stadium that would otherwise go into state coffers. The first $3 million of it would go toward the team instead. So to me, that is the most perverse form of corporate capitalism. I mean, corporate welfare, where you're taking something that would otherwise go to the state's general revenue, stuff that goes to education, universities, Medicaid, you know, all the stuff like that. Instead, it's going to go into some rich guy's pockets to put a roof over rich people's heads.
So we did ask members of the Public Insight Network what they thought about the Dolphins proposal, and they have been waiting patiently. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll hear some of that feedback. And later on in the show, we'll talk about some state issues with Mary Ellen. She's up in Tallahassee. Mary Ellen Kloss, Steve Litz from NBC6, and Michael Mayo from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. I'm Phil Latzman. We'll come back and hear from you on this in just a moment. And welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. By the way, new jobless numbers out for the state today, and we might as well drop these in. The unemployment rate's 8% in December. That's a 0.1% improvement from November. It's at its lowest level at 8% since November of 2008. More dramatic drops in Broward and Palm Beach. Broward down 0.3% to 7% now, down to 6.7%, rather, below 7%. In Palm Beach, it's down 0.4% from 8.4% now down to 8%. Miami-Dade's seasonally adjusted rate, however, went up 0.4% from 8.4% to 8.8%. So we are going to continue now the discussion on stadium deals as we asked members of the Public Insight Network for their thoughts on this, about the Dolphins' proposal to go halvesies with the costs of renovating their stadium with the public. And let's go first to Marcus, who actually works for the team of the Miami Dolphins, and we welcome Marcus to the Florida Roundup. Hi, Marcus.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
So you work for the team?
I do indeed, and have been making rounds on radio and TV, and just wanted to make a couple quick points before you guys get into the discussion in earnest. First of all, on the point that it's halvesies, it's really not, and that majority commitment is just a starting point for discussions. So let's be clear on that. This is not about 50.1%. This is Steve Ross committing to pay at least for the majority of the project cost. Second of all, to Mike's point, Mike Mayo, we're not going to be disqualified from bidding on championship games. What's going to happen is we're simply not going to be able to get the sort of like the Super Bowls and championship games like we had here last week with the same degree of regularity. When we have a modern competitive facility, we get a Super Bowl on average every 4.4 years. But if you think back to the period between 1979 and 1989, when the Orange Bowl became a little bit dilapidated, we didn't get a single Super Bowl in that period of time. The third point I want to make is about the legislation. I know we're talking about rebates and distributing tax money. This legislation that's been proposed does not distribute a single cent. All it does is enable the county to have a conversation with us and determine whether there's a deal that works for this community. It's not actually distributing anything. It's simply enabling the county commission to have that discussion with us. And if the county commission doesn't feel that there's an agreement that's workable, that's where it ends. And lastly, with regard to the sales tax rebate that's in existence, that was used back in 1992 to make modifications to the stadium to accommodate baseball. It went to any football purpose. These rebates are tied to franchises. That one was tied to the Florida Marlins to make those baseball improvements. And part of what we're trying to do is much more than a roof. We're trying to unwind the baseball configuration that we had in place here to accommodate the Marlins and make it a true football and soccer facility for the next 25 years.
So, Marcus, why not, first of all, public opinion is strongly against this for whatever reason. Obviously, maybe the Marlins had something to do with poisoning the well on that. But what if Stephen Ross decided that he would just maybe whatever he's committing in his own pocket now, that may be enough just to get the basic improvements done instead of doing the first class, the entire $400 million. If he's willing to pay $200 million or $250 million or whatever his proposal is, wouldn't that go a long way to improving the stadium enough to get another Super Bowl? And the follow-up question for you is, isn't the advertisement that you'd like to be here in January good enough rather than teams struggling to get people to be interested in Dallas Super Bowls or New York Super Bowls? I mean, isn't the weather here and the fact that the stadium may not be as brand new as every other stadium, but isn't that enough to attract people to come down here for the Super Bowl? Isn't that enough of a bargaining chip?
Well, we think Miami is the best place for these sorts of events, but as we saw in the 80s, it's not enough. And the fact is, we don't have to have the best state-of-the-art facility like Dallas has with their $1.2 billion facility, or Santa Clara has that with their $1 billion. We just have to be at a minimum standard. And at this point, we're starting to fall below that minimum standard, and that's where it becomes very thorny for us.
Right.
And additionally, what we're looking to do here is preserve the stadium for the next 25 years. Sure, lipstick on the pig, but that's not really going to solve the problem. We want to give the community a facility that can serve them and bring these sorts of economic drivers for another 25 years.
All right, Marcus, thank you very much for calling. And Mike, do you want to just respond to any of that you had to say?
Well, I mean, I guess it's true. The days of us getting a Super Bowl just by, virtue of being South Florida is over. We're not going to see it as frequently as we did in the past because just the amount of stadiums that are in rotation now, it means it's going to be every, 7 to 10 years instead of every 4 or 5 years. So I don't know. The question is, if we don't do all these things, will the Super Bowl still come here every 7 to 10 years? And if we do these things, will it be every 5 years? There's no assurance either way. I think the other thing is it has to be a case of prioritization. What the Dolphins want is to get all these little bells and whistles from the canopies to the screens and the HD lighting and wider seats. But if they have to, since we've already heard that Steve Ross is
willing to spend this much money,
can they pare down their list and instead of spending the 400, spend the 200 and just prioritize what's the 200 you want without the public fund component?
All right, let's go back to the Public Insight Network and our listeners there. Douglas in Davie. Hi, Douglas. Welcome to the Roundup.
Hi, how are you doing today? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay, my whole thing on this is I'm a small business owner, and if I want to improve or expand on my business, I have to go to the bank to get a capital or reinvest some of my profits that I'm making. The Dolphins are a highly profitable franchise, and if the NFL on a whole believes that the stadium needs to be upgraded, the NFL itself is also a profitable enterprise. Lend them the money. But because there is access to free-for-all, the public money, and the politicians are going to roll over to all these big guys, that's why they do it. And as you said earlier, there was a professor on who said, there's no real economic boom for the area when this happens.
Right.
So we are going to be left holding the bag as usual. We the small people,
Well, Douglas, you're in Davie, by the way, so you wouldn't end up holding the bag. So you'd be in Broward County.
Regardless, I'm a Floridian.
Right.
You understand? So whether I'm in Davie or I'm in Miami-Dade, it still matters because who's going to stop the next guy from coming along to do the same thing?
Right.
We've heard about the Panther Stadium, that they got Sunrise to build it. And we have been hearing that they haven't paid rent for how many years. We've heard that the AAA was built. There's a loophole in their contract. Rent has not been paid because they're not profitable. Are you serious?
Right.
Come on, man. If this guy had this money and he believes in his business, go and get a loan or take the money out of your pocket.
Douglas Steve Litz?
Well, you just got to look at the practicality of all of this. And if you could put, it's difficult in these times to put economics aside, but I'll tell you what, there is an incredible intangible to this. You got to look at that. You got to look at image. You got to look at how many millions, hundreds of millions of people are going to see South Florida, that stadium, South Beach on television. And so, you know, when those events come to town, whether it's the BCS or the Super Bowl or anything that gets all this, you know, worldwide attention, you know, you sit back and you look at Miami on television and it's like, wow, that is just tremendous. I mean, look at, you
nobody's
know,
complaining. At,
Douglas,
I don't hear anybody complaining.
Thanks very
right
much
now,
for your call, Douglas. I just want to get to a couple of more people here. Adam is in Miami, also via the Public Insight Network. And Adam, you have a bit of a different view from Douglas.
Yes, I do. And Phil, thanks for having me on your program.
You actually have a blog we should mention. No, I'm sorry, you're not the guy with the blog, but you do think the tax fund should go towards the renovation.
I do. And actually, to Douglas's point, and for everybody out there, that kind of doubts that this is beneficial for our community and county. You really don't have to look any further than the numbers. So going back to our most recent Super Bowl in Miami, that being 2010, bed tax revenues were actually up over 30% in Dade County compared to the very same weekend in the prior year. And very similar numbers from 2007 when we also had the Super Bowl compared to 2006.
But the argument is that, the hotels are already very, very busy that time of the year. In fact, it's the same weekend as the boat show and that the hotels would be living up to capacity as it is. So it's not going to really add too much on top of that.
I understand, but I'm just talking numbers from Super Bowls to weekends that Super Bowls are not held, but the boat show is held.
And that's a function of the rates they can charge, even though the capacity is full no matter what. When you have Super Bowls, the minimum rooms are going for $400 a night as opposed to maybe $250 a night. I think that accounts for that discrepancy in the bed tax dollars. And, yeah, it's more money in the bank. So, yeah, you can make a case for that.
All right. Go ahead, Adam. I'm sorry. Finish up.
No, that's okay. I just have a couple more points, if you don't mind. You know, when we travel to other cities and pay upwards of 15% on hotel bills, we are funding the very facilities that are stealing revenue-producing and community-impacting events from us. So why wouldn't we leverage our visitors in the same way? And then
just because everybody else does it doesn't make it right. That's the thing.
I understand. But
they can afford
their own. How much is enough? You know, I mean, when you get that bill, you check out of the hotel, you're in such a good mood, maybe you've had a couple of drinks, you don't even notice it. But then at some point you go, well, that $17 hotel tax, that's a little bit high for a $100 hotel,
right,
or whatever it is.
Continue to go to these communities. I have one more point, if you don't mind.
You know what, Adam, I'm just gonna let you go, just because I got so many other things to discuss. And
Phil,
I think
if you would just allow me
very quickly.
All right, definitely. I'm probably the most passionate Miami Dolphins fan that's ever been on this radio program, but I'm a Miami-Dade resident first. All right, I'm a Miami-Dade resident first, and I see the positive impact of the modernization. I see it when I buy the Herald and Coffee in the morning, and the taxi drivers and rental car companies. Not a dollar comes out of our pockets as Miami-Dade residents, and a 1% raise in mainland Miami-Dade taxes is not going to drive people away from Miami. Rather, it's going to bring them in and draw, and that's a positive impact for the community.
All right, Adam,
I want to rebut
that point. Very much, but quickly, Mike, because we had other stuff to do.
I know, we got a lot of ground to cover, but you know, they keep saying, oh, this isn't going to cost Miami-Dade residents $1 because it's only bed tax. Well, you know, let me ask you a question. Have you ever had a home repair? Have you ever been through a hurricane? Sometimes local residents have to stay in local hotels. So if you want to parse the language, not true.
Well, this is the residents
not
don't
true.
Have to pay it. How's that? There you go. Residents don't have to pay it.
They don't have to pay it, but sometimes they will pay it if they check into a hotel.
Well, put it in the language of the law. All right, so you're listening to the Florida Roundup. This topic's blown up. I'm not sure we're going to have much more time for it. We had to flip things around a little bit, and we're going to get into state politics very patiently, standing by in Tallahassee, listening to this firestorm of conversation. Has been Mary Ellen Kloss, who is the Miami Herald's Tallahassee bureau chief. Her eyes probably glazing over as she's listening to it, going, what are they talking about, stadiums in South Florida?
No, honestly, this is the kind of enthusiasm and passion with which people are addressing this issue is the kind of fight we have in the Capitol. You know, you've got to realize, I think listeners have to realize that Miami is viewed as a real outsider in Tallahassee when they bring this issue up. And it's a perennial issue. And I sympathize with the Miami-Dade legislators because they have to shoulder the burden of trying to persuade their reluctant colleagues up here to go along with this kind of an argument. And we hear it, you know, we've been hearing it for 20 years. It's just, here it is again.
So aren't we kind of donor counties down here, though?
Well, we pay most of the sales tax.
So, yeah. I mean, that's got to be a consideration when talking about how much, you know, benefit Miami-Dade is enjoying from Tallahassee.
Well,
the other thing
we hear is that Miami-Dade is in so much need for education, health care, all these other needs that are not being met. And so the arguments, you know, you've got people who say, well, why should we put tax money into building a stadium for rich people, you know, when there's all these other things that are going unmet?
All right, we are the Florida Roundup, and you were listening to it here on WLRN, and it's one of those days we know we could do like 2-3 hours, but we just don't have the time. So we're going to put that on hold for a little bit and go to some developments in Tallahassee with Mary Ellen. The Florida Supreme Court with a big ruling yesterday that the pension law that was passed by the legislature in 2011 will stand. That is the law championed by Governor Rick Scott and the Florida legislature. Attorney Ron Meyer represents the Florida Education Association, which sued to overturn the law unsuccessfully.
A school teacher, a policeman, a state worker, all of these public employees can scarcely afford a 3% reduction in their pay.
And if the ruling had gone against the state, Mary Ellen, it would have cost $2 billion to reimburse employees. So you have to wonder if they were thinking about that at the Supreme Court when they made this decision, but it looks like a pretty big victory for Rick Scott and the legislature at this point.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, this will make the upcoming legislative session a lot easier. They don't have to worry about finding the money. We're seeing that the budget looks rather stable this legislative session. So they've just breathed a great sigh of relief. There were some members of the legislature who were actually quite surprised at the result, because they feared that some of the judges would go the other direction. But all in all, I think that this is just another sign that Florida has, you know, is tightening its belt in every direction. And this was a really easy way to do it for the legislature 2 years ago.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Mike, teachers who don't make a lot of money, any employee of the state doesn't make a lot of money, feels they shouldn't have to contribute their 3% to their own pensions.
Well, I mean, they went into the job with one expectation, and then all of a sudden the rules get changed, even though they have a collective bargaining agreement. So you could see why they feel a little miffed. Adding to that, a lot of these teachers have not had raises for much of the last 5 years because of the meltdown. And this year they're getting another whammy because the 2% Social Security tax holiday that they enjoyed the last couple of years is now gone, and we've all gotten used to that. So now, you know, it's basically their checks keep getting squeezed. They're in the middle class, and this shows one thing that, you know, as much as Rick Scott wants to moderate as we get closer to his reelection date, he's lost all the public employees and the unions now. He's never going to get those votes. He's going to actually have some pretty antagonized opponents and some, you know, well-financed opposition in the form of those public unions.
He has done in the matter of voting an about-face this week, Governor Rick Scott. Steve Litz, what did the governor say yesterday that kind of surprised people about voting laws?
Well, he was so adamant about limiting, reducing those hours, a money-saving issue. There were some other reasons as to why he wanted to do it, eliminating that last Sunday voting, which was huge in the African-American community with their Souls to the Polls program. But about face, and the pressure from not just the League of Women Voters, but from constituents all over the state, especially us here in Miami-Dade County, where some of us, including me, stood online for hours and hours when it came to early voting. So now he's going to extend the voting, or certainly going to encourage the legislature to extend the voting hours to add in that Sunday, that last Sunday voting, and it is an about face for the governor,
and
14 days, extending the number of days, all kinds of political undertones here, and you wonder why he's so adamant about it, when he first did this 2 years ago, and here it is in about face.
But he says, and Mary Ellen, earlier this week, the governor distanced himself from that election bill. He said, quote, "I did not have anything to do with passing it." How could he say that?
I don't know how he could say that, because he signed it. He didn't have to sign it. He could have let it become law without his signature. But he had everything to do with it because he signed it. So, you know, that it's just a convenient memory lapse maybe on the part of the governor, but he also had an opportunity to do what the previous governor had done, and that is sign an executive order as soon as he saw that those lines were extremely long and allow the polls to stay open.
Like Charlie Crist did in 2008.
That's what Charlie Crist did in 2008. And actually, the Black Legislative Caucus met with the governor this week, and they reminded him that they asked him to sign an executive order. And that's when he said, well, I didn't have anything to do with that law. So it's all convenient memory. It's you know, I think there are some people that waited in line that are not going to forget it easily. But on the other hand, I'm not sure many of those people would be, you know, eager to be voting for this governor anyway. So
we're going to talk about another major issue in the state, the gun laws some of the stand your ground laws and the bill presented in the legislature. Probably doesn't have much legs on it, but we'll talk about it and other issues related to how Florida's possibly could change laws related to guns and gun control. But Mary Ellen, you have a very special opportunity next week. It's an online conversation. It's part of our town hall project. Now, if you haven't heard about this, we're having a town hall event at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts February 25th, and we're going to have a couple of the state lawmakers, Chris Smith from Fort Lauderdale, Jack LaValla from, Clearwater, the Republican, a Democrat, and Mary Ellen is going to be here for that. It's supported by Global Integrity, and we're having a series of conversations online, one of which I believe is next week. Is it February 22nd, producer? Elaine Chen, I think it is January 22nd. It is Tuesday, and I think it's taking place at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And we want to hear from you, Mary Ellen, specifically with the Global Integrity, about ethics issues and whether or not some of these state lawmakers are getting campaign funds and how they're using them. Is that correct?
Well, that is one of several ethics issues that the legislature has decided it's going to take a look at this session. They're actually considering the possibility of changing the campaign finance laws, significantly eliminating some of these shadowy political committees that pay for all the ads that we see on television, where you know you get an ad targeting one candidate, but then it says it paid for by two other candidates. Also, there's a movement to raise campaign finance limits. Right now, the limits are avoided for the most part. But we've got a $500 cap for individual contributions. But anybody who really wants to influence a campaign just doesn't give the money to an individual candidate and instead gives it to these political committees that have just ballooned in size and influence.
These committees of continuous existence, right? CCEs.
That's their name, right?
And this is very interesting stuff, and it's an online discussion that we're going to have next Tuesday, January 22nd, 4 p.m. with Mary Ellen and Dan Krasner of Integrity Florida. And again, our town hall event on February 25th, where we preview the session in Tallahassee. We're going to come back and talk about whether guns will be part of that session and gun control as it's been in other states. The Florida Roundup continues, and your feedback as well in just a moment. And welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on 91.3 WLRN, 91.5 FM. If you're in the Keys, I'm Phil Latzman. Reintroducing our panel, joining us from Tallahassee is the Miami Herald's Capital Bureau Chief, Mary Ellen Kloss. Here in the studio with us in Miami is Michael Mayo from the South Florida Sun Sentinel and Steve Litz from NBC6 Television. For those that want to follow you gentlemen on Twitter, what do you got there, guys? What's your Twitter handle, Mike?
At Hey Mike Mayo, H-E-Y Mike Mayo.
Mr. Litz?
At Steve, NBC6.
Easy to remember. Mary Ellen Kloss, spell it out, right?
Yep, K-L-A-S.
K-L-A-S, mm-hmm. And I'm at Phil Latzman, and we want to continue with some of the thoughts we've gotten from the Public Insight Network and our listeners on the stadium issue, so hang in there if you've been waiting on that. We'll try to get back to it near the top of the hour. Now, continuing the discussion about Governor Rick Scott, a new poll shows him shows former Governor Charlie Crist with a big lead over Rick Scott in a head-to-head matchup. Crist also well ahead of all Democratic primary challengers if he chooses to run for governor in 2014. This is a public policy polling survey that was released this week. 53% of respondents say they'd vote for Crist, 39% supporting Scott. The governor continues to poll poorly, with only a third of the voters approving of his job performance. Survey director Tom Jensen says Crist, who became a Democrat in December, is strongly supported by members of his new party.
His favorability rating with Democratic voters is now 70%. That's up from just 44% in September. So it's clear that making that official switch really did a lot to get Democratic voters to warm up to him. And Democrats want Charlie Crist to be their candidate for governor next year.
52% say they'd support him, 18% for the 2010 Democratic nominee, Alex Inc. These are Democratic voters. And the Broward State Senator, Nan Rich, Steve Litz, just 1% support. What do you think of that poll right there?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly it would be very difficult for Nan Rich. She's not very well known outside the South Florida area. Granted, she's been in politics here for a long time, but I think this gubernatorial race is going to be the most expensive, one of the ugliest in the country. I could see the attack ads now with Governor Crist attacking Mr. Scott on his record and what he's done in Florida so far, especially with respect to his social agenda. And I could hear it now as far as Rick Scott's campaign ripping Charlie Crist over switching parties, first Republican, then an independent, now a Democrat.
Now, Mary Ellen, there's a lot of controversy this week over the dog that Governor Scott had while he was running for governor, that people were trying to find. His name was Reagan. We just explain this controversy to us. What is all the barking all about up in Tallahassee?
Well, it all started when we were just simply doing a little profile on the governor's wife and asked the question of, where's the dog? They ran a campaign when Rick Scott was running for governor, ran a contest to name their new dog. They had a Labrador puppy that they had obtained from a rescue. And they found a name, and they named it Reagan, and they did put a big Facebook contest out there and got all kinds of attention and media scope. As soon as they got into the mansion, apparently the dog was not very well behaved, and they were not very good at training him. So they quietly got rid of the dog. And when we asked what happened to the dog, they just wouldn't answer. They stalled us for weeks. And finally, we tracked down the dog. And we're able to find that they'd given it away. And we got the governor on record, and he finally fessed up that his wife just couldn't handle the dog. They were afraid it was going to destroy and damage, you know, nice furniture in the mansion. So they got rid of it. But rather than just telling us that story to begin with, because how many people have had, you know, puppies that have been hard to deal with, they obfuscated and I think made this a bigger story than needed to be.
Wow.
It's never the deed. It's always the cover-up right. that gets you. But I think there's a parable here because, you know, I think, you know, Reagan has become anathema to many Republicans because he approved a whole bunch of tax increases back in the 80s.
Yeah, they changed the dog's name, right? The dog's name is not Reagan anymore, right?
Now the dog's Pluto.
Pluto.
No. Neutral. Isn't that a discredited planet? I don't know.
It's not better even than a planet anymore, right?
Better than Pluto, yeah, right. John Blutarsky in Animal House. But.
All right, so the other big news this week is on immigration reform, and we're seeing it. I think we're going to hear a lot about that in President Obama's inauguration speech. Not that I've talked to the speechwriter, but just sort of getting an idea of what's being formulated. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida is taking his immigration reform ideas public, or more accurately, to the conservative media outlets. Rubio wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, then he appeared on Fox News and both Hannity and O'Reilly, and here he is with Mr. O'Reilly.
We need legal immigration. It's good for our country, but we also have a right to have immigration laws and as a sovereign country to enforce those laws. We have a problem.
So, Steve Litz, why now on this push from Marco Rubio on immigration reform? And how does he differ from what the president may offer?
Well, I think they both have the same end game, which is somehow accommodating the 8 to 12 million illegals who are the undocumented folks who are here now. And so while I think the president would make it a little easier, make the pathway to citizenship a little easier, pay fines, learn English, things of that nature, I think Mr. Rubio's proposal is a bit more cumbersome than that. But I got to tell you, you hope, dare I say this is encouraging, and maybe we get something done on immigration. We've heard you got to close the borders first. You got to fix the borders first. Well, I got news for you. They're making progress in some of those southwestern states in fixing the borders. And the number of illegals crossing the borders is down. The number of deportations is up to record levels. Nobody's deported more undocumented criminals specifically than the president. And so you hope that we're getting somewhere in this very, very complex issue of illegal immigration. And one other thing is that the whole notion of self-deportation that that Governor Romney floated during the during the campaign, you finally dispatch unworkable ideas like that and get to something pragmatic and practical. And I think that's where this may be headed.
Mike?
I'm also viewing this through the political prism of 2016. I mean, clearly Marco Rubio is positioning himself as, being the voice of a new moderate, he still wants to be a conservative Republican when it comes to fiscal, but I think there's a realization that the party needs to embrace and become a little bit more immigration friendly, and this is part of that, both for him personally, because you keep hearing his name bandied about as a possible front runner in 2016, and for the Republican Party overall.
And Mary Ellen, can't go back 3 years from now, or 3 years ago, when Governor Scott was running for office, trying to get the nomination against Bill McCollum, and really ran on a very severe anti-immigration stance. Campaigned on being very hard on illegal immigrants, undocumented immigrants, if you will, and we really haven't heard much at all from him about that since.
No, when his first year of his term, there was a movement to do some really harsh immigration reform, and the thing that really stopped it was the agriculture community in Florida just put the pressure on the Senate particularly, and the bill just never got out off the floor. I think that was a signal to Rick Scott that this is not a issue that is going anywhere in Florida, and he has backed off dramatically. The thing I find remarkable about Marco Rubio's proposal is that it's come from a Republican at all. It hit, the elements of it, everything from border controls and employment verification and just the guest worker idea, the elements of it are so much of what the Democrats have been proposing and nothing at all from where the Republicans have been. And I think it is a huge move. He wants to distinguish himself as a leader, obviously, going forward in 2016. And I think it's a remarkable change of direction.
Two legal immigrants, by the way, will be featured prominently in the inauguration on Monday. Poet Richard Blanco, who grew up in Miami, the first Hispanic and Cuban-American, will be delivering that poem. He's working very hard on it because he will not call anybody back. Everybody's been trying to get an interview with him. Pastor Luis Leon will also deliver, part of an invocation. Both of those are of Cuban descent, spent time growing up in Miami and South Florida, and that comes up on Monday. One other story before we get back to the calls and the feedback on the stadium issue. We'll return to that in just a moment. But big news in Broward this week. Mike Mayo, yesterday, in fact, a federal judge dismissed terrorism and support and conspiracy charges against an imam at a mosque in suburban Margate. Tell us what happened here. And we've heard a lot about this story for a couple of years now. And
This was the case where originally, back in May of 2011, a father who's a imam at a mosque in Miami, the son who's a imam at a mosque in Margate, and the brother who's a cab driver were all arrested on charges of conspiring to aid the Pakistani Taliban, a terrorist organization. Well, the charges against the brother were dismissed a long time ago, the older brother, the cab driver, and then just this week, a federal judge, after part of the trial unfolded, said the case was so flimsy against Ishar Khan, the younger imam, that it basically dismissed it before they even had to present any kind of defense. And so basically this imam, even though the case against the father proceeds, the younger one, the son, is basically free, and he'll be preaching the Friday afternoon mosque
and
service.
You're going.
Yeah, I'm going to be heading up there right from here. And, it's one of these cases where, 20 months, he spent 20 months in prison, in jail, held on these charges that turned out to be so flimsy it didn't even make it to the jury. Does he get an apology? I don't know. But it's one of these things where, you know, our justice system ultimately prevailed, but there's a lot of injustice along the way.
And it's a reminder that Miami 7 or Miami 6 case a few years ago with the Liberty City 7, I guess they called them, Liberty City 6 eventually, since one of them, but didn't quite get what they needed out of that as well, the federal government. Now, we have been, we'd had some postponed to the discussion. We do have some folks on the line that want to continue it. We did ask members of the Public Insight Network about their thoughts on the stadium. We've heard a spirited discussion and some very good points made on both sides. So for those that have been waiting, we'll return to the line on the big news of the week. Of course, the Dolphins asking for $400 million in the stadium renovations. The owner, Stephen Ross, is willing to pitch in a little more than half, but the rest would be paid for by hotel taxes for Miami-Dade residents and possibly incentives from sales tax. So Christopher has been waiting a long time to get his thoughts in on this, and we welcome him to the Florida Roundup. Hi, Christopher. Thanks for waiting.
How you doing? Thanks for having me on the program, Phil.
So tell us how you feel about this, Christopher.
I'm pretty torn on this. You know, it's not a black and white issue to me. I am a season ticket holder of the Dolphins and the Hurricanes. I probably attend about a dozen events a year at the stadium. I agree that it needs upgrades, but there's a lot of our community that needs upgrades as well. You know, we have needs across the board: poverty, health, education. So, you know, is this a good use of our funds? The big problem that I have with this is that I don't feel like there's ever been any significant public discourse about it. And I don't think there's any long-term planning that goes into these issues. I mean, I feel like every time we need something for a stadium, or whether it's baseball, basketball, football, it just kind of gets shoved down our throats. I think if we have an actual discourse and public town hall style forums and let the community kind of decide what this should look like, we'll probably end up with a much better result. I think we should, you know, had we done that 30 years ago, we might still be playing football at the Orange Bowl site. We might have a baseball stadium on the bay, and we might still have a basketball stadium right off the Metro Rail where the old Miami Arena was.
It's an interesting point. And I think one of my problems, and there are a lot of palatable components to this deal. I mean, pegging it to an increase in the bed tax that's just going to mainly affect tourists, that's good. But you hit on the point where when these deals get negotiated, it's always ends up being one-sided. Like, you have these very sophisticated business people from the sports teams against basically, you know, these staffers from the county. And by the end of the day, even though, you know, they like to talk about a private-public partnership, it ends up being the public that pays the freight, and the private ends up siphoning out all the profits because they have these hard-to-reach thresholds. So I think in this case, you know, if we can sit down and have a fair deal where from the first dollar that comes in, there's some sort of revenue sharing as opposed to a hard-to-reach limit, yeah, then we should be open to it, maybe.
All right, Steve, so call it, Steve Litz. Do you think it'll happen very quickly? You think that this it has the light of day at all with the Dolphins will be able to get public?
I think they're going to do something, but I don't know if it's going to involve
scale it down a little bit, right?
Yeah, what we talked about earlier, maybe you cut it in half and you prioritize what kind of upgrades are necessary.
And before we say goodbye to Mary Ellen Kloss, we want to remind you to reserve your seat for the town hall meeting she'll be a part of here in South Florida on February 25th. The guests include the Senate Democratic Leader Chris Smith of Fort Lauderdale and Republican Senator Jack LaValla of Clearwater, who's the chair of the Ethics and Elections Committee. And right with them will be Mary Ellen Kloss. And again, the first online discussion for that is next Tuesday with Mary Ellen and Dan Krausner from Integrity Florida. Mary Ellen, as always, it's great to have you as part of this. We look forward to the session and having you more a part of our coverage.
Thanks. It was great.
And we thank you for listening. That does it for the Florida Roundup for this Friday, January the 18th, 2013. Thanks to our guests, Steve Litz, Michael Mayo, and Mary Ellen Kloss. If you missed any of the show, you can listen to it again on these airwaves tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. We also do post it on our website at WLRN.org. The Florida Roundup is produced by Alicia Zuckerman. It is made possible every week by the efforts and hard work of our associate producer, Elaine Chen. Thank you, Elaine. Our Public Insight Network analyst, Steph Farrow, who gave us all those thoughts, and listeners on the Public Insight Network, and social media editor Danny Rivero with the online discussion. Our executive producer for WLRN is Peter J. Meritz. For WLRN Miami Herald News, it's Dan Gretsch. Our technical supervisor, Paul Fingers Leary. Paul will also be part of South Florida Arts Beat today? No, I guess that's Ed Bell. He's right in the studio behind Paul. Anyway, he's going to have that coming up. It's only a game if it's on Saturday morning. Until next week, I'm Phil Latzman, reminding you to stay informed, South Florida, and thank you for listening.